Hello and welcome to Under New Management, the podcast that highlights new and notable management research that can enhance your effectiveness as a leader. In this episode, we look at the persistence of the glass ceiling. I talk with Jenny Hubler of the University of Illinois at Chicago about bosses' perceptions of female subordinates' family-to-work conflict and how this prevents them from being promoted into higher leadership positions. Jenny Hubler, welcome to Under New Management.
Thanks, Mike. I'm glad to be here.
Great. It's great to have you on the podcast, Jenny. Jenny, your study looks at the persistence of the glass ceiling that prevents women from ascending into top leadership positions in many organizations. Several female CEOs have been fairly prominent in the media over the last couple of years. I'm thinking of people like Carly Fiorina, who was at Hewlett-Packard, and Ursula Burns, who's currently at Xerox. Is the glass ceiling still a major problem?
Well, I think that the term the glass ceiling, you know, was popularized a while back, you know, in the 1980s. And since then, there have been a lot of people who have sort of sounded the death knell for the glass ceiling and said that it's over, that women have found equal parity with men in the workplace. But our research, and I have to say a lot of other research that's accumulated in recent years, shows that there is still a glass ceiling for women. Catalyst, which is a highly respected nonprofit that focuses on gender and business research, in 2007 found that women who hold the titles of chairman, CEO, COO, and executive VP still remain at about 7% of the population of executives in the United States.
Wow.
So we see that, yeah, it's still a very, very small minority of executives who are women, which still lend support for the idea that women are in business, but they're just not ascending to the top ranks. And actually today, you know, I'm located in Chicago. Today, the Chicago Tribune reported that among Chicago's 50 largest publicly held companies, 7 of those have no female directors and 17 have no female executive officers. So, you know, in Chicago, which you would think, you know, major metropolitan area, maybe the glass ceiling wouldn't be such a problem, but
right. It
seems like it is still quite the problem. You also mentioned Carly Fiorina when you asked me this question about the glass ceiling. And yeah, I think that when women do make it to the top positions, there is a lot of media attention surrounding them, but also that they're really under the microscope. You know, they're sort of asked to stand for all women, and maybe they're just wanting to have a successful career themselves, but people sort of hold them up then as a representative for all women. And actually, Carly Fiorina, when she assumed the helm of Hewlett-Packard in 1999, said she doesn't think that there was any glass ceiling. She thought that like I said before, that the glass ceiling was a thing of the past. But when she was virtually forced out of that position in 2005, she made a statement to the press that said she thought she was wrong, that there are still barriers that women have to overcome in the workplace to reach parity with men.
Yeah, it certainly seems like there are. Well, when we talk about women in the workplace, we often think about conflicts that they might have between their work and their family. And one of the key constructs in your study is family-to-work conflict. Now, can you explain what that means and how it differs from another concept that researchers sometimes use, work-family conflict?
Mm-hmm. Work-family conflict is sort of the term that maybe people use more generally, which just means that work is interfering with family life. And that happens quite often when, you know, you have to stay late for a meeting and you can't pick up the kids from soccer, or there's an important deadline and maybe you need to travel to meet that deadline or to get some resources together for a company presentation, and you're not able to honor family commitments. Well, what we thought was probably more important in understanding how the work and family interface affects women's careers is that we wanted to look at family-to-work conflict, which means that family is interfering with work. We thought that when it was visible to a woman's manager that her family life was getting in the way of how she was doing her job, that would be really salient and a reason that managers may then overlook that woman for promotions. They may think she's less reliable. They may think that she's not able to get put in the time necessary, you know, to be an effective contributor to the organization.
Mm-hmm. And you thought that this family to work conflict would be related to kind of fit with the organization and fit with the job. And a lot of research in the last couple of years has examined how employees fit with their organizations. So why did you think that fit would be associated with this family work conflict and ultimately with the glass ceiling effect?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Linus and Heilman published a study of 450 of upper-level managers in 2006. And I like what they said in the title of their study. It was said that fit is fundamental. And what they found was that especially for women, the typical female characteristics of women, you know, being more communal, being more caring, that that's often seen as a mismatch with the requirements of especially line-type positions rather than staff positions. And what they found in their study was that women who made it to the top actually had to have received higher performance appraisals than men who were in leadership positions in those organizations, which sort of suggests that when we think of women, we don't think of manager. And, you know, there's this old saying, think leader, think male. And we think that that's still in operation. And so women at the top sort of have to be twice as good to overcome those typically female characteristics that they're saddled with.
Right. So why then is fit associated with the glass ceiling?
When you don't fit, so when a manager thinks, you know, who do I want to promote? Who will be my successor? The old think leader, think male comes to mind. And so women aren't a fit with that leadership model, and they're not the ones chosen for the promotion. They're not the ones chosen to be the successor for a leader who may be vacating a position. So they come up against that glass ceiling. You know, maybe their performance appraisals and their past, you know, behavior on the job was good enough to get them to a certain point. But when managers think of leaders in the organization, they're still thinking of a male person who should assume those roles.
Got it. So can you tell us a little bit about your research sample and methods?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. We drew our sample from a Midwestern U.S. division of a Fortune 100 transportation firm. This is a goods handling organization. And we surveyed two levels of employees in this organization. The first level, and those were the people who we called the employees in our or the subordinates in our study, these subordinates were actually supervisors themselves, and they handled day-to-day work activities like scheduling, forecasting, actually watching over and providing supervision for part-time employees that they supervised. Mm-hmm. And then the managers in our study were the direct supervisors of those employees, the subordinates. And they were higher-level supervisors, and they had responsibilities for one functional area within this goods handling firm. And what we did was we had two different surveys. So for the employees, they had a survey where we asked them a lot about what they experienced as far as their family to work conflict, how many promotions they had received, and so forth. Mm-hmm. And then we had their managers also report on those employees, telling us how good of a performer they were, whether they fit with the organization, whether they fit with their job, and also whether those managers felt like these employees were promotable in the organization, whether they had what it takes to move up in the company. And then our key variable that we were really interested in was this family-to-work conflict. And we wanted the managers' perceptions of whether they felt like their employees experienced family-to-work conflict, because we felt like it was the manager's perception of the employee's family-to-work conflict that may be potentially holding women back mm-hmm. from moving up in the organization.
That makes sense.
Thanks. So we had 52 managers and 126 employees or subordinates. And so when we matched those together, one manager who supervised a certain employee, we had 126 dyads. So we could look at the relationships there between the surveys.
Okay. And what were your results?
Well, our results, we validated what we think is a pretty interesting model that sort of explains one reason for the persistence of the glass ceiling. You know, a lot of researchers have said there is a glass ceiling, you know, for maybe 20, 30 years, but we really wanted to look at why is there a glass ceiling? Why are women not getting the promotions? Mm-hmm. So what we found was that just being a female is related to your manager's perceptions that you have high family-to-work conflict. And when your manager feels like you have high family-to-work conflict, your manager feels like you're less of a fit with the organization, you're less of a fit with your job, and that you have lower performance. And when you're less of a fit and you have lower performance, what happens is your manager sees you as less promotable. And then we also found that for people who had lower fit and lower performance, they had received fewer promotions in their organization.
So it wasn't just that they were seen as less promotable, they were actually promoted less.
That's exactly right. Another important thing to realize about our model, Mike, is that some people might say, well, maybe the women that you surveyed did have more family-to-work conflict. Maybe they did have children and they did have outside family responsibilities that conflicted with their work. Well, our model, we actually controlled for several things. So we controlled for whether these women cared for a dependent, whether they had a child under 12, whether they were married or not, whether they had experienced a career interruption, for example, like taking maternity leave. Mm-hmm. So all of these things would call attention, you know, to the fact that these women had outside family responsibilities.
Right.
And what we found was that even for women who didn't have any of those things, their managers still felt like they had a high degree of family-to-work conflict.
So even if you're single, have no children, or no elderly parents to care for, the manager still perceived that these women had some degree of family-to-work conflict.
Very true. Mm-hmm. So then we call that the family-to-work conflict bias that bosses have about their subordinates who are female.
Wow. Okay, so Jenny, how can organizations apply your findings?
We think that the main lesson from our study is really a very simple one. We don't think that managers, who are both male and female, want to be biased in their judgments of their female employees. We think that this is something that basically we just need to call managers' attention to, the fact that they may be prone to making sort of sexist judgments when it comes to who's promotable and who's not. You know, for example, a manager may think, you know, I'm not going to pick Sophia to go on overnight travel because I know she has a young child and I don't want her to be away from home. But the fact is that maybe that overnight travel opportunity is a good one as a career development opportunity for Sophia. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe that's where she can get exposed to decision makers in the company, or she can make really important outside organizational contacts, do some networking that will help her career. So while managers may be thinking that they're actually helping their subordinates who do have some, you know, family-to-work conflict, or at least they suppose that they do,
right,
these little choices that managers make may be actually hurting their women's careers down the line.
Sure, it's sort of a paternalistic point of view toward their female employees.
Yeah, I think it is.
Well, you're not saying that companies shouldn't try to help employees with actual family-to-work conflict, though, are you?
No, I am not. But I'm saying that managers shouldn't just assume that women have this conflict, and they shouldn't assume that just the presence of some family responsibilities, like being a mother, means that women aren't interested in advancing in the company.
Right. And it seems like the big problem for women is not the family-to-work conflict itself, but rather this perception of family-to-work conflict.
That's right. Which brings up another point that I wanted to mention. Companies spend a lot of money on what they would call family-friendly policies, you know, where they pay for employees' child care, or they may even, you know, build an on-site child care facility. We wanted to call attention to the fact that if you're bringing children on or near work, you may be calling attention to the fact that you have these outside family responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
And the more your family responsibilities are made salient to your manager, then maybe the more prone you are to that manager holding those family responsibilities against you when it comes down to who's going to get the promotion.
Right.
So we're not saying that, you know, family-friendly policies are inherently bad, but we would just caution women that the use of them may actually call attention to these outside roles that they have that may detract from their career potential.
And cause managers to think that they're less of a fit with the organization than they should be.
That's exactly right.
Wow. Okay. Well, Jenny, what would you say is the bottom line for leaders?
I would say that women need to be aware that it's not their own perceptions of their family to work conflict that may be holding them back career-wise. They need to realize that it's their manager's perception of their family to work conflict that may be holding them back. And, you know, something that was important from our study to realize was that both male and female managers held these biases against their female subordinates. So if you're a female leader, or a male leader, I guess I would say, please examine whether you're not intending to do this, but little decisions that you're making towards your female employees may be biased, and they may be impeding the career progress of those women.
We've been talking with Jenny Hubler from the University of Illinois, Chicago. Jenny, thanks so much for joining us on the podcast.
It was a pleasure, Mike. Thank you.